Thank you for listening to the Highlander Podcast, where we have conversations about the past, present, and future of the outdoor industry. Thanks to Utah State University's Outdoor Product Design and Development Program for making it possible and for training the future product leaders of the outdoor industry. Learn more about the program at opdd.usu.edu. The Highlander Podcast is sponsored by the Outdoor Recreation Archive, a collaboration between OPDD and USU Special Collections to preserve the history and print materials of the people, products, and brands of the outdoor industry. Follow the archive at Outdoor Rec Archive on Instagram. The Highlander Podcast is sponsored by the Utah Outdoor Association, a business association focused on elevating Utah's outdoor industry through educational programming and events. Their membership consists of Utah's outdoor manufacturers, retailers, outfitters, and guides. Member benefits include networking opportunities, recruitment of talent, and brand promotion. More information about volunteering and membership is available at utahoutdoor.org. On this episode, alumni from the OPDD program, Natalie Cullum, Connor Young, and Jacob Johnson return to the program to share their experiences and answer questions from current students that are preparing to enter the workforce. I want to turn the majority of the time over to our guests, and to you, because the thought is today that you all have questions for our alumni. And I appreciate them taking the time to be here with us. I'll let them introduce themselves, but we've got Natalie, Connor, and Jacob, all graduates from the program. Natalie's at Orvis, leaving for Asia in 4 hours. So thank you. Connor with Cotopaxi and Jacob with Outdoor Research. So I know we have some questions. You guys have some questions. I've got some in my back pocket, but want this to be an opportunity for you to talk to our alumni and learn from them. But I'd love for them to just go around and share a little bit about themselves, talk about their career journey just briefly. So maybe we start Natalie, Connor, Jacob, and then we'll get into questions.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. Happy last day of class. I'm Natalie Cullum. I graduated in 2019, so the first graduating class of the program, along with Connor. I have been at Orvis for 5 years now, and I am the product designer for the Fish and Hunt technical apparel. So I do everything from waders to pants, all outerwear, mid layer, base layers, that kind of stuff. It's a pretty big assortment. So that's an awesome opportunity. Should we tell how we got here? Or what are you thinking, Chase?
Yeah, that'd be great. If you can just talk about how you broke into the industry, that would be great.
Yeah. My story might be a little unique. So it kind of happened with the senior studio. I ended up designing and developing a fishing line, and the capstone being prototyping and building a pair of waders. I ended up posting that to Instagram, and somehow Orvis heard it through the chain and reached out to me about becoming a new designer for their team. So kind of an unconventional way there through Instagram is kind of how I got my start here at Orvis. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
That's great, Connor.
Yeah. Hey guys. So I'm Connor Young, and I was, technically a part of the first graduating class. I officially graduated in 2020 just due to my minor taking one more semester. But so I am currently at Cotopaxi, and I've been there just over 2 years, and it's really flown by. And kind of how I got to where I am is I did some local design and development, project coordinating in Logan for Little Unicorn. And I guess before all that, I had worked at Al's and the local ski shop, so I was always very rooted in the outdoor industry, even growing up. So yeah, so during school worked at Owls and then Little Unicorn for about 2 years, and then kind of took a risk and went to a company called Hydrojug in Ogden, where they were just going a million miles an hour, and it was really fun, but it didn't end up great in the end for me. They had to lay me off. And so in that time, I really kind of like rebuilt my portfolio. I learned a ton, you know, there only being there for 8 months, but then, yeah, there was, a lot of, sorry, losing my words here. A lot of, jobs opening up, and Cotopaxi posted like four design jobs, and I was without a job, so I applied for every single one of them. And it took a long time, but they ended up interviewing me for two, and yeah, one worked out. And so I'm currently color designer for packs and equipment, but also have adapted into managing all lab dips through the mills and vendors. And approvals there, and a little bit of like trim design and trim development. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag, but overall, color is like my main focus.
That's cool. Great, Connor. Thank you. Jacob?
Hey guys, Jacob Johnson. I'm working outdoor research, like Chase said. I do kind of, I wear a lot of hats here, actually. I do mostly our tactical design. So we have a segment that ties closer to the military. So I get to be fortunate enough to design for that line, but then I get in-line items each season as well. So I tend to kind of wear a lot of hats when it comes to bottoms or technical outerwear, mid layer, base layer type stuff, and then a little bit of headwear even. And then the other part of my job is I do our trim design and development as well. So like Connor, I do a lot of the lab dip process for those and communicate with a lot of our vendors about trims and where they're at. I got into the industry by actually just posting on LinkedIn. I had some sketches that I had from my internship that I ended up posting, and my now boss reached out about a position that they had and asked me to apply, and it worked out. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So hopefully in that time, you all have been thinking of some questions and maybe sparked some questions, but I'm going to walk around the room with Mike. Who wants to kick us off? Who's got a question for our wonderful panel?
I've got a question for Jacob specifically. When you graduated, like how do you feel like your moral compass has shifted since moving into industry and working in the field that you do?
That's a great question. I think that something that they hammer pretty hard in the program is sustainability. And I think that kind of swallowing the pill of like sustainability is really hard to land when you're talking cost and quality sometimes even. Sometimes like recycled items just don't perform quite as well or cost a lot more. So I think that that's been maybe a moral shift of accepting like, well, do I want it to be a sustainable item like content, or do I want it to last longer, which is a different form of sustainability. So it's kind of like learning to navigate the industry as a whole, in the sense of what sustainability actually looks like versus what it ideally looks like.
That's great. Natalie, Connor, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll hop in. Particularly because Cotopaxi is known for sustainability. The upfront costs, like Jacob is head on. Like we run into like massive cost issues, and it's just like, you know, what realm of sustainability we're going to do? Because I think so much of it forward facing is the environmental pillar of sustainability, But the social and the economic pillars of sustainability are like incredibly important as well. And so I think that's where, and I don't want to speak for the whole company, but that's where I see like Cotopaxi really leaning into a lot of their social sustainability, you know, relieving poverty. Lots, they have their foundation that works on poverty and education and a lot of those things. So while our products are as environmentally sustainable as they can be, given cost restraints and, you know, what's just like available in the market, social sustainability is really important. So I think as you guys are, you know, brushing up on portfolios or, you know, looking at companies you want to work for, like, take a look at those. Yeah. Take a look at those aspects because those are also important, I think.
Okay, great. Natalie, did you have thoughts or should we go to the next? Okay, let's that go to the next.
Yeah, we can go to the next.
Okay, all right. Other questions?
Keep asking them.
Keep asking them hard questions.
What do you feel like is the biggest day-to-day challenge for you as a designer? Do you feel like you are constantly busy or is it ebb and flow?
I can start with this. I think the constant challenge for me, and of course I've grown better at it year to year, but it's just time management. You're getting pulled in so many different directions. You're having like email fire drills come in and it's just like, how do I focus on one thing, finish that, and then move on to the next? And also like prioritize what is most important. And that could be seasonality. Like at Orvis, I'm working on anywhere from 4 to 6 seasons at a time. So it's like, what is the closest to launch and work back from there? I think it's my kind of daily challenge of just like, what am I doing today? Where's my focus going?
I think very similar to that response. For me, a lot of the time, it's like finding time to actually get into the flow of design, because I'm sure we all kind of have that, you know, it takes a good half hour to an hour to really like get in that flow state. And a lot of the times you're bogged down with meetings or emails or anything else. And so really like learning to set aside time to get in the groove and actually design. And then once you're doing that, you know, you're working on a whole design team. And so it's not just you representing the company. And so kind of figuring out how to have a cohesive line, even though you're working in one segment, and make it tie into the rest of the items that other people are designing, because everybody's mind is different. And I think that that's kind of a interesting thing to learn to juggle.
Yeah, 100%. I'll add to this because it is like, it is a great question. And I totally agree with like the seasonality. You know, you're working on, you know, whether it's like an 18-month, 22-month calendar, or you're like shifting calendars altogether. And so it's like you have 4 seasons overlapping. And so, yeah, being able to communicate not only within your design team, but cross departmentally with like development and planning and operations, and they all have specific asks, and you have to make sure you hit your deadlines handing off, you know, your pertinent information. So I think just like some tips and tricks, like we work on Slack, you know, and usually people are pretty respectful of like, if you snooze your notifications and like you change your icons, it's like, I'm digging into like color design, you know, you can add a little note, you know, back online in 2 hours, you know, and like really dedicating like pockets of time for focus. And of course there's going to be like those fire drills and you gotta pivot, but yeah, be flexible, but like also respect yourself and like block out times that you're like going to be dedicated to like your design or your development.
That's great. We had Paige Koch here a couple of weeks ago, also from the program, and she talked about scheduling out those times for like her deep work. And I like that way of phrasing it, whether it's design development or PLM, like what's the core of what you need to do? That deep work that you just need to be a little more solitary and crank out versus all the other stuff that you are responsible for. So I'm glad that you all hit that as well. Question here.
And one thing I'll just add to that real quick is like when you're communicating, like, because I think everybody is just like, there's communication breakdown. You'll find that in any organization. I think for you to like not be annoying, but to like over communicate and just be able to like, when you're handing off, you know, your documents or when you've completed a task, like line it all out. And so whoever's receiving it can just like read your message and not have to hit you back up with questions. So that's one skill that I was just like, if I can take 5 minutes and like write out a very clear response or something like that, then that saves a lot of back and forth.
I had another question. I was just curious from each of you in your hard skills, what did you feel like the largest gap was where you needed to be versus where you were when you graduated? Like when you got into your first role, what was the largest gap in your skills that you felt like you had?
For me, hard skills wise, I feel like it was probably understanding like technical construction. Cause I mean, at Outdoor Research, we do ski kits and a lot of taped jackets and things like that. And so coming in and understanding a lot of, how materials interact with like heat and things that are, that you're able to do with those items and not able to do. And then of that, kind of taking materials a step further and understanding like the properties of certain materials. I think that the program covers a lot of that in a really great way, but each company is going to have their own materials and you're going to have to learn them. And I think that that was something that was pretty difficult for me at the beginning, at least.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I felt pretty, I mean, Orvis isn't, our kind of software and systems is pretty behind a lot of the companies, but I do think like fabric and understanding the difference between everything or how to pick a good fabric and that kind of stuff took me a lot longer than honestly most other things in transitioning into this job. Like just going to every fabric vendor or trim vendor that came to the office and touching hundreds of thousands of fabrics until I really realized like, oh, this is a nice fabric because, and being able to tell the difference between things. And then like waterproof breathables are a whole nother beast and just learning the layups of that kind of stuff. I don't feel like I was as prepared with that as I was like, you know, Illustrator or things like that. I was pretty solid coming into my job with.
Those are all great points, and I agree with those. I think in addition to all of that, kind of like what I was saying before, is like working cross-functionally. Like your sales team is like going to hit you with just like rant, like albeit like maybe well-intentioned, but just like really random feedback from time to time. And it, like, I think a lot of, you know, they'll go to a show or they'll go to like a wholesale showing and they'll come back and they're like, oh, they don't like this. And like, you can't really like take it personally. Like you have to let like the whole team distill it. And, you know, does this make the right sense, you know, make sense, or is this the right move? And so I would say like getting feedback or getting messages or different communication from other teams, like take a second, distill it, you know, not everything is like personal. And then like one thing like that I had a hard time with was like, I'm the designer, like this is my work, and, you know, I'm putting my stamp on it at the end of the day. but at the end it has to reach a consumer. And so like diving into your personas and really focusing on like end user is huge. So that's also another thing is like you should be proud of the work you do and you should have ownership of it. But at the end of the day, it has to work for like the entire company, it has to work for the end user.
That's great. We've got another question here.
Okay. So now that you guys have these positions in the industry, how long do you plan to stay working there and what are your future goals going forward?
That's a big question. I didn't expect myself to be at Orvis for 5 years, but here I am. I think once I find myself stopping learning, I feel like I've mastered the job here, which I'm far from at the current moment, then I will probably move on. I think my job's somewhat unique in that I am in the process from ideation to commercialization. I do all of the design development, sourcing. I go to the photo shoots. I get to do all of that. So it's a whole heap of information that I'm still trying to figure out. So I think once I get to the point where I would never coast, but you can kind of like coast through the job because you get it. I think that's when I'd kind of start to look at more opportunities.
I think I'm right with Natalie on that, where I feel like I came into this and I don't quite do like marketing and end stuff, but I get to do the design and development on a lot of things. And so, yeah, there's just a ton to learn. And at this point, I think the only thing that would really like take me out of outdoor research in the near future is I think that sometimes your senior designers will end up leaving and going elsewhere. And it seems like it's pretty typical in this industry that they'll take people with them. So there are definitely a few people that if they were to leave outdoor research, I'd be like, Hey, can I come with? Like, but yeah, not much that has me leaving right now. So.
I think for me personally, like, I think there's still a lot of growth that can happen for me, like where I'm currently at. So it's just like constantly evaluating, you know, growth trajectory. But also like I am in a pretty niche position, so I don't know if there's going to be like a follow-up position like this elsewhere. So it's kind of that evaluation of like, what do I really want to be doing, you know, in like design or development or PLM? And yeah, you can always be looking for other jobs. It's just whether, yeah, are you feeling fulfilled? Are you feeling like you're contributing? Do you like the design work? It all really depends. And it can come down to like the benefits of the company. But also it just comes down to a personal feeling of, do I like the location? Do I like my team? I think there's a lot of turnover in the outdoor industry, and what Jacob said is spot on. Like one person leaves and then like there's a max exodus to that. And so, and it's kind of that game of like grass is greener. So like really do your research, really do your homework on like if you want to switch up. But yeah, also if things are like really hard and not functioning, like you can test something out too. Don't be afraid to hop and like get something different.
This might not also be a glamorous answer, but to kind of add on to that, I think that something that keeps people is that we work, you know, a year and a half plus in advance. And so, you know, I've been at Outdoor Research for about that long and I haven't seen anything that I've designed in market yet. And so it's kind of like that desire to like stick around and see how it does for the company and see like what your investment was and like, you know, landing those types of things. I think that's also something exciting that like makes you want to stay at a company. So
So on that note, Natalie, you've seen some of your product out on the market, and Connor, I don't know if you have yet, but can you speak to that? Like
just barely.
Oh, can you talk about that? Like, what's that moment like? What are the feelings and thoughts around seeing your work actually out there?
I mean, it's a pretty big moment, especially like the first season that you see things come out. Because we work so far in advance, sometimes you kind of forget what's coming out. Cause I'm thinking about fall 26 and spring 24 is coming out. But honestly, the biggest moment for me is when you see it in life. Like I'm at the grocery store and I see somebody wearing the insulated jacket that I made. Like that really hits home to me. Or I go on a trip to Florida and, you know, somebody's fishing in the shirt and pants that I made. Like that's really cool to me when you just kind of like see your products out there in the wild. But of course I'm, you know, going to Orvis.com and looking at the new launch and seeing how all the imagery came out. And, so it's really exciting. But you always, or at least I do, I'm like, oh, I wish that could have been better. If I had a little more time, I would tweak that. So you just take those learnings on to the next season and that happens over and over again. But yeah, it's definitely a proud moment for sure.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I would say like gratifying to see, because so much you're working digitally for so long. And then after 6 months, like you get your SMS, like your salesman samples in, and you're seeing it in person for the first time. And that's really cool. And then you review it and, you know, your line in those bigger, like line reviews, like, your PLMs on there, developments on their sales is on there. And then they're going to tweak it, you know, they're going to make some changes here and there. So it's like I think you have, and this is what I was saying before, like you have to be proud about your work, but in the end, like it might change a little bit. So like one of my favorite bags that I designed color wise, changed quite a bit, but now that it's out in market and seeing like what the marketing team, like how they displayed it and like the photo shoots that they took it on, like it looks better than I could have ever imagined. And so, you see it on your computer screen for so long, you're like, ooh, that looks good. And then, when you see it in someone's hand or like on the website or like in a photo shoot in Costa Rica, you're like, that's even cooler. So,
I had a question. This is kind of going to be different for each of your respective companies. And if you had a smaller company, it would definitely be a lot different as well. But what are some like roadblocks or difficulties that you found in the industry, whether it be like connecting with manufacturers or just like the hierarchy of your, like who you answer to, who you're reporting to? What are some of those roadblocks that you found? And like, how do you think you could like improve some of those issues?
Mine's maybe not the answer you're expecting, but meetings. Outdoor research is pretty notorious for like dumping meetings on calendars, to the point like we kind of on design, we block out days so that our calendars show as not available so that we can like find time to innovate and design. But I think that to Connor's point, you know, that communication between teams is so important, and sometimes people get sick of emails. So it feels like you just have little blips of, you know, 30-minute meeting to catch up on this, or somebody went to Asia and they have a presentation of like what they found, and all of those things start to stack. And so I think that's a really big pitfall for us at Outdoor Research, honestly, is that when you're scheduling different meetings with so many different people, it kind of takes away time from the actual job itself. I won't say all the time, but a lot of the time is how
I have two thoughts. One, the first one being definitely Like, I'm going to Asia this next week, and there is just that email communication barrier. I mean, we try to hop on calls as much as we can, but to talk through those fine details of a product, you can make so many more strides if you're there in person. So if you ever have the opportunity to go to the factories, wherever they might be, I think that's such a big learning experience. My first year going overseas was last year, and I got to go to all of our factories and our mills, and I just learned so much in that time period. And now I can better communicate with them because I understand their capabilities and what they can do, and learn new technologies and that kind of stuff. So there's always kind of that roadblock of like, there's only so much you can say in an email. You try to be as descriptive as you can in a tech pack, take lots of photos. But there's sometimes there's nothing like just being in person and having a chat. And I think the second thing is kind of touching back to Connor's point of just like, if you are going to, there are barriers in talking between teams. Like here, I kind of have a hard time going through my boss to the merchant team. A lot of the time I have to filter through him to get to the merchants, which can be a barrier at times. And like Connor said, if I clearly lay out everything that I need, the problem we're solving for, the answers that I need and when I need them by, if I come to the table with that, it goes so much smoother than just like a random question, because that a lot of the times doesn't get grabbed. So if you anticipate the questions before they're asked and come to the table with all the information possible, you're more likely to kind of push through that roadblock.
Those are all super good points. If I could just add anything, like a lot of times it also comes down to like budgets, and like you might have like an awesome VP or awesome manager who like is really rooting for your team, but like their hands are tied, and like you can, and so, and those are like decisions like being made like three levels above you, and it's really frustrating at times, but like because you know how good a product can be, or like, you know, maybe there isn't enough budget to go to the factory this season or something like that. And going to the factory really does facilitate a lot of communication. You get much better products. But so yeah. Or, you know, a neighboring team gets a VP and they want to shake things up because it's how they did things at their old place, you know, and it has a trickle down effect on all of like the people that answer to them. And that's maybe interrupts maybe a good groove that you had with, you know, a developer who's like on your same level, you know, just across the table. So yeah, a lot of people dynamics, a lot of like heuristics go into all of it. So I think be true to yourself, like stand up for yourself and like put out the work that you want to do. Hopefully that your company has like a good feedback system or a way you can review and share things that are like, you know, irking you or something like that. Hopefully like the companies out there will, you know, your managers or when you're in your one-on-ones will listen and like can help you like find solutions. But sometimes it just takes, you know, there's the creative solutions in the products you're making, and then there's the creative solutions in like the work dynamics that you have to deal with. So you guys can also really be creative there.
Great. Another question here.
When you guys first started in your roles, I just had a question about trying to understand your employer's expectations of you and what it took to, you know, be successful in each of your individual roles, and kind of like what that process of like acclimating to a new job looked like.
I guess I can go first. In my current role, I had like previously I had done some like, you know, color designing, color approvals, things like that. But landing at a place and my manager being so like having owned that position by herself for nearly 6 years and kind of like creating the DNA of Cotopaxi as far as color goes, like it was big imposter syndrome. Like I was like, what am I doing? I'm not fit for this. And she was very reassuring at the beginning. It's just like, just observe and then try and duplicate and then give me your iterations. Give me what you think looks good and we'll work through it together. And that worked. And then sometimes like the line would be cold, you know, and I was just like, oh, what the heck is going on? Like, she's not giving me any feedback. She's not like connecting with me. Like, I feel like I'm getting nowhere. And I think that was just like, you got to walk on your own. You got to like do it for yourself. And really like make your case and be upfront with like the designs that you're presenting and then like, get your attention. So I thought it was like neglect, but then I was just like, no, this is just a growth period. You know, this is a time for me to like really figure out what I like to do. And a lot of the times when you start at a place and if it's like your first place out of college, they're going to tell you just like, you know, observe, ask questions, sit in on these meetings. But then one thing that I can really recommend is like, if you're new to something, you'll find out pretty quickly, like what's not working. Cause like you won't understand it very easily. So take initiative and try and solve it. For example, that's kind of how I ended up with like lab dips, because we have thousands and thousands of lab dips each season. Cause Cotopaxi just does so much color and no one wanted to do it. The role had, or I guess the responsibility had been passed from design back to development, back to our materials person and stuff. And I just basically said, like, I had an idea of how to build a new tracker and I just took it on. And, yeah, so I own it now. And it's something that like I've become almost an expert in. That's something that they say at Cotopaxi. Like when you become an expert in your role, then like you move to the next step, you can take on more. So, yeah, if you find something that's not working, like give it your best shot and it just might end up working for a lot of people and you'll get recognized for it.
I would just add to that to instill some confidence. Coming out of this program, you're going to be very prepared for the industry. There's always job nuances and things like that, but the program is really giving you the first step to get into your new role. It's preparing you, probably over preparing you in a lot of ways. So feel confident when you go into your first job. It's definitely scary, but yeah, you guys are definitely prepared.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I think that especially now, I mean, I feel like the program each year just gets better and better. And so like you guys are going to be walking into interviews and jobs, like understanding a lot more than any of us might have. And honestly, like they're outdoor companies. I feel like we can all agree they're pretty chill. You know, you're coming into your positions and like, yeah, you have a job to do, but people aren't just going to like toss you in and say like sink or swim. You're going to make mistakes. They're going to be understanding and like, it's going to take a long time to learn your position. Like I've been here about a year and a half and still don't fully know my position. It's just constant learning and constant changing. So, I think that most companies and people are pretty good about understanding the dynamic of that and supporting you in learning. So, yeah.
I also would agree that the program keeps getting better and better, but I'm just wondering if there was things that you guys wish you took advantage of more when you were in the program or things you wish you used this time to really get good at or learn before you got your jobs.
There's so much. I had like three minors and I still feel like I wish I got to take every class that they offer there. like you said, the program has changed. The 3D like Clo browseware hadn't really come in when I was there. And that's something that I'm like, oh, I wish I had the opportunity to take that class or at least, you know, learn a little bit about that. Cause I do see it. It's kind of trickling into Orvis now. And I'm like, I don't really know how to do that. Let me hop on YouTube and figure it out. So it would have been really nice to learn that in the program there. But yeah, I mean, that's all I can think of. What about you guys?
I think the textile science class, you know, I'm not super familiar with the curriculum. I know you guys have way more resources than we did, but like, it's kind of back to what Natalie was saying at the very beginning, like you're touching hundreds of fabrics each season and then being able to identify is like, oh yes, this one is nice because it has these features, the minimum order quantity is doable, you know, the cost is right. And a lot of that falls on like development and like a, from a material standpoint, but like having that rapport as a designer, like being able to like share, have that shared understanding of like fabric qualities and fabric quantities and construction methods and, or weaving or knitting methods, like that's huge. So I would really like do some extra research in materials and fabrics and, also trims, like, reverse coiled, coated coils, you know, all for zippers, pullers, buckles, everything. And what I'm finding is like a lot of your, it might be like this for you guys too, but like there might be like your nominated suppliers, like your brand names, Duraflex, Nifco, things like that. But sometimes when you're working with factories to get it at the cost you need, they'll do work with like local source or comp stuff. And so being able to like make sure that a tier two or a tier three supplier can have the same quality as like maybe your tier one or nominated suppliers. So that's pretty granular, but like that's just one thing that like extracurricular, like do some research like outside of like your classes for like really getting into like the fine details of maybe what you're going to add to a tech pack or a bomb.
For me, something that I wish I would have taken more time to use regarding the program or learn. I mean, you guys have like a ton of resources. You have a great lab, awesome professors that know more than they're teaching you. And so honestly, like creating relationships with those professors and talking to them through the same, you know, you're here talking to us about all this stuff, but like they know this stuff too. And so kind of using your resources of, you've got a cool lab with materials and everything, go use it. You know, you've got professors who can answer questions and put you in contact with people who might have answers that they don't have. It's kind of like the start to your networking. And I feel like that's something I wish I would have done a little bit more is gotten in there and just kind of, you know, to follow up Connor's point, like get in there and do something extra, just to learn. Cause I think that's, you know, you're there to learn already. So you might as well like push it.
On mentors, how do you identify whether a company is going to be a place where you feel like they're investing in you and your long-term success? Not every company does that. Some companies just want you to be a cog to, you know, get work done, but others are going to put time and effort and resources into helping you grow. How do you identify that during the interview process? Is that something that you were aware of as you were interviewing for these jobs or other jobs? What do you look out for in that regard?
I can start this one off. I don't think that I had a mentor in mind per se when I was coming into the job, but I remember my first one-on-one with my manager. He sat down and he asked like, well, what are your goals here at at Outdoor Research? Like, what do you want to work on or learn while you're here? And then he asked what I wanted to do after I was done there. And I think that that was, you know, my first big, like, oh man, you know, I should be thinking in that scope of like, I'm only here for as long as I'm here and then I'm going to move on, and, you know, long-term, short-term goals. And I think that, you know, that was a pretty clear sign on my end that he was a great mentor, is that he was considering, you know, not only what he could do for me while we were together at Outdoor Research, but like beyond that.
I think in the interview process, you can ask, like, what does success look like in this role? Or just the different levels of designer, developer, PLM, anything you're interested in, how that kind of progression goes, how long does it typically take somebody to move up in those types of ranks? I think that's all pretty fair game to understand in the process. I learned pretty quickly that Orvis, you know, was definitely investing in me just with the amount of projects I kept getting, and just that continues to grow every season. So that shows a lot of investment in me and trust in my design and development.
Yeah, definitely. Like, ask hard questions in the interviews, like, make them want you, you know, make them, you know, like, get a real taste for their culture in the interview too. And I was kind of like unsure, like, I knew Cotopaxi had like a pretty good culture, and getting there, like, once arriving, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. And then, I wouldn't say I had, like, I had my manager and she was teaching me a lot, but like, I wasn't getting like, maybe like a ton of like outside industry experience. And then they hired a new director of development for the PAX team. And he has been around the world a million times, like worked with so many different factories, just like a wealth of knowledge. And like, I was just like, hey, I'm putting 30 minutes on your calendar, like every other week. And like, can I just chat? Can I just pick your brain? So, identify someone who has like experience and, yeah, talk to them, ask them questions, like use that resource and just learn from as many people as you can. But yeah, finding a sole mentor is difficult. Well, I mean, may not be difficult, but, it might take some time, but yeah.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but do you have parting thoughts for this group as some of them head out into industry, some head out to internships? Any final thoughts?
I think something that will set you apart is just kind of showing passion and really like leaning into the sports or whatever you're interested in designing for. I think you get a lot of knowledge and inspiration by actually doing the sports. I do fishing and hunting, and I didn't hunt when I came into this job. And now that I go out into the field and use the products that I design for, I'm like, oh, I get it. This is what I need to do to tweak to make that experience better for the user, because I'm out there doing it. And I think you don't need to be an expert at any of the sports you're designing for, but if you're willing to put yourself in those situations, I think that definitely speaks volumes. And good luck.
Yeah, I would just say be enthusiastic, be a team player. Learn how to pivot, and when things get tough, look for creative solutions, and always self-invest. Like, keep up on your, you know, if you're in development, maybe keep up on your sketching skills, because you never know, like, your next place, you might have to wear multiple hats. So just stay up on your soft skills, and as well as, you know, try and learn as much as you can when you're starting out.
I mean, to echo both of them, like, passion's huge. Just be excited about what you're doing, no matter what you're doing, because it'll come off in your work. The only other thing I'd leave you with is, like, one of the things my manager first said to me when I started was, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And that, like, I try to live by that. Take your time, be intentional, and, like, put the work in, and the timing will be just fine. And yeah, good luck.
All right. Well, I appreciate these three taking the time. They don't have to do this. I've leaned on these three a lot as they've graduated, to stay involved. They don't have to. I really appreciate them even answering my emails. I think that's, like, a unique part about the program, is that our alumni stay involved, and I just appreciate them being willing to take some time and share with us. So thank you guys for taking time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Highlander podcast. For more conversations with outdoor leaders, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, watch episodes on the Outdoor Product Design and Development YouTube channel, or on opdd.usu.edu/podcast. Follow along on Instagram @USU Outdoor Product, and let us know how you're enjoying the show.